Hello, welcome, Reanimated fans. This is episode 208. These numbers are getting really big. I don't know if I can keep saying the numbers. My name is Stuart. This is a podcast about zombies and stuff, and undead creatures. Mostly about movies and TV and books, comic books that we want to talk about that feature those things. And the we I'm referring to is myself and the inevitable H.A. Conrad.
Whoa, you sound really energetic today. I'm excited. But we do have an awful lot to talk about today.
We sure do. Stuff has happened, and it's been a couple weeks since we were able to get together. So let's kick right into it, H.A. First up is a lot of bad news for some. I don't know. Maybe not. I think we've already talked about how Santa Clarita Diet was canceled, or have we not?
We did talk about that.
Okay, so they're done. Mm-hmm. Also, a lot of other cancellations to process here. The Passage finally got the axe. I'm not sure if I should feel sad or happy. I guess sad is the appropriate response, but
I don't feel sad. I think that they didn't do what they needed to do with that, and I am hopeful that somebody is going to take up a project and redo it at some point in a better way. So
I find that unlikely as a prospect, and I also think that they waited too long to make it into a show, and the strain took a lot of the wind out of their sails and also kind of sucked in a lot of ways.
I agree, but I still think that The Passage, especially the first two books, have an awful lot of potential for a series that is not this. I do think that they needed more funding and better writers. And I maybe could see this happening further on down the line, but we'll see. Maybe not, but regardless, I'm not, the way that this unfolded, I'm not unhappy to see this go away. Another show I'm not really unhappy to see go away is Whiskey Cavalier, which was the project that took our dear Maggie away from The Walking Dead. And we were just talking about the fact that we watched the first couple of, I don't think I made it past the second episode. And I was really,
nor did I.
Was really confused about why this was a better option than The Walking Dead, but maybe it's just because she has a more prime role. I don't know, but she has a pretty prime role in Walking Dead. I don't know, but this is not a good show.
But it would let her stretch her acting wings in a different direction. Like, true. This was humor, although she was not really a humorous character.
No.
She got to try a little bit of humor. Mm. But it just wasn't good. And what's sad about this also is that another Walking Dead alumni went down with her in the form of Tyler James Williams, who played Noah.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
On The Walking Dead. He was like one of their, he was like their tech specialist. Either way, this is like a really tired formula TV show that they decided to try and put together.
And look, I think Lauren Cohan is, or Cohan rather, is really great. She is awesome. And like, I was hoping it would be for something a little bit better than this, but maybe this opens up opportunities for her elsewhere. I'm sure it does. She's great. She can certainly anchor a show. And maybe this is for the best, but I feel sad for her, 'cause obviously she was hoping that this might lead elsewhere, but you know.
Yep. There it is. Then also another alumnus whose show met its end was Cudlitz. With The Kids Are All Right, which also got canceled, which I hadn't seen a single episode of.
No, I had not seen it either. But anyway, you know, I think that they're all very talented people, so hopefully they'll end up in other things. And I'm sure that Lauren Cohan will, at least. And I think Cudlitz, too. Williams, just because of the sort of way of that role, I think he's got a little bit more of a mountain to climb.
He's had a lot of work since Walking Dead.
No, he definitely has. But you know, I think that having a show that's like almost having a show where the hope is that it sort of like everybody buys into it and you get a lot of seasons out and then you can do whatever you want because you have all the royalties because it goes into syndication and all that thing, and it is an uphill battle for a lot of these actors. It's such a competitive industry. Yeah. But anyway, but we'll see more of Lauren in The Walking Dead, which is great. And, you know, I'm glad they left her storyline open.
Yeah. I don't think there's really a guarantee that we're going to get her back.
I think we will.
Yeah, but it would be kind of crazy for her not to. But, you know, maybe Pride could get involved.
So there was an article, I think just because, as you know, Walking Dead is coming back on June 2nd, and there was this whole like live science thing about human decay. And it walks through the usual steps, but it also talks about some of the decisions they've made with the makeup of the walkers in The Walking Dead, like the dripping skin and all that, and lividity, and you know, it's kind of the usual tropey stuff that you get, but it's still interesting to look at it. And I am always fascinated that from the how creative the makeup artists and the people who have to make these things look, you know, terrifying, but also not, I don't want to say realistic, but they are actually trying to follow some things that would actually happen, but also knowing that they're dealing with like a reanimated thing, and a fake thing. So I don't know. It was just kind of, it was interesting. It does have a few pop-up ads, so sorry about that. Do you want to talk about what's happening in Chicago? Because this was like the funniest thing about this article was what the symptoms are of these little rodents. Or raccoons, I don't know. It was just really, to me, it was like glowing eye. Like the whole thing was hilarious.
I mean, if the headline is raccoons in Chicago can be deadly to dogs, I'd be like, no dir. This
Yeah.
is this These are raccoons and they're the size of bobcats and they're terrifying.
Right. And apparently, I mean, we had talked, I think we touched on this when we talked about the zombie deer, but in this case, these are basically a lot of rabid raccoons. And they talked about this a lot in December. And they're very aggressive and apparently have glowing red eyes or glowing eyes or something like that. But they bare their teeth and they're like, you know, it's the usual story, but it's just interesting that it is such an issue. But anyway, I just thought it
How the
was.
hell do they have glowing eyes? How is that a
I don't
symptom of
know, but that was just like
distemper?
this article. I was like, okay, there. I don't know.
USA Today maybe getting a little editorial.
Yep.
So I was just searching around before we started recording for Walking Dead news, and I did find a couple of things actually. Like, there's a new ca another new casting announcement for Fear the Walking Dead is going to include the brother of the kid who played Sam on The Walking Dead, of the worst family in the history of the show. Do you remember the worst family?
Which
They all got
family?
torn to pieces in Alexandria. Sam was the boy who was really scared, who got them all killed. So
Oh,
that actor's brother is joining Fear the Walking Dead.
yeah. Oh, cool.
So neat. But then when I was looking around at that, because The Walking Dead has kind of a long history of hiring people's
Relatives.
siblings and spouses, it turns out that the guy who plays, his name is Scott, who we've never known his name, and it took this article from UpRocks from January that I never saw until today to clarify this. We've often gone back and forth about who this guy was, you and I. So Scott is the bald black guy who was shot in the ankle in like season 6 or 5 when they were doing the quarry chase. And he has been an extra with speaking parts ever since. And so this was an UpRocks article about how he's the MVP of the show because nobody knows who he is.
I
And he
know.
just happens to be the husband of Sonequa Martin Green.
And I have often wondered about it, and it makes me happy to see him. He's sort of an omnipresent character, and it makes me happy to see him. I didn't know any of this, so I was happy. I had no idea he was her husband, but I'm very happy that he continues to be in the show. It's just one of those things where it's like, all right, at least we have somebody that's part of the general community that's just popping up here and there, and now he has a name, which is great.
He has a name, he has several names. And his real name, the actor's name, is Kenrick Green, which is the green part of Sonequa Martin Green's name, I presume. But how cool is that? So a
Very
couple
cool.
little tidbits casting-wise, although one of them is literally like 4 years old for Walking Dead and Fear the Walking Dead. And then you have been reading reviews of The Dead Don't Die? Say it ain't so, HA.
I didn't, I mean, this one, I kind of feel like it isn't really a ton of spoilery, but basically The Dead Don't Die premiered at Cannes. It opened the festival. And I skimmed through the review. I will say there are spoilers within it. So if you don't want to read it, don't read it. But this is all just to sort of tease the fact that it opens in the US on June 14th. So, but basically, the gist of this article is just kind of going through the Jim Jarmusch, like, why he is the way he is, and also gives like a tip of the hat to Tilda Swinton in a pretty funny comment. But in any case, I think I'm very excited to see this. And I think I told you that when I went to see Avengers Endgame, this was one of the trailers, and the audience was all really getting into it. And my friends who went with me, some of whom aren't really into these kinds of movies, were excited. So I think I am going to probably see this in the theater when it comes out. I hope it opens on your coast and where you are. I hope it has a wider release than some other of the other things we watched.
Yeah, let's not have another Anna and the Apocalypse where we have to wait 6 months before it makes it to Amazon Prime or whatever.
Right.
I'll keep an eye out for it, and I definitely would like to review that as soon AP. As soon AP.
Yay.
That's how awake I still am.
Well,
that's the end of our news. We ran out of news.
Yeah, but I think we should jump into our recap slash review of the final two episodes of Black Summer.
All 43 minutes of them.
I know. And so these two episodes are entitled The Tunnel and The Stadium. And, you know, there's a lot to unpack here.
I mean, there is, yeah, there
more
there
so
is,
I think in the stadium. There's a lot actually while watching it. I wrote a couple of notes just because I was just like, oh man, I can hear what Stuart is saying about this right now.
yeah, well,
and you know what I'm
predictable.
You know what I am talking about. But let's get into the tunnel first before we get there. And basically, this is just after the heist, and this is the sort of remaining group of people end up what exactly is this facility? I'm not quite, is it a warehouse?
It's whatever it is, it's supposed to be underground.
Okay.
Right?
I think so. But basically they end up in this space, and they do have some of the infected chasing after them. And then the two soldiers that we saw doing the reconnaissance on the roof end up coming through and kill the zombies and call them out and basically are like, we know you're in there, come out. And these two gentlemen should look familiar to us because they know who Spears is. And it is an interesting dynamic because both they and Spears know know he's not a soldier. He knows that they're like corrupt, or we don't, but still we don't fully know the story, right? So we're kind of left to sort of draw our own conclusions. Basically just based upon the sparse dialogue when we first get introduced to Spears, they are looking for something, quote. He's mentioned loot a couple of times. What that loot might be that could possibly be valuable in this world is, I have no idea. And we know that he killed their friend and he is wearing the uniform of their friend, or at least their colleague, or whatever you want to say. So it's a very interesting piece of dialogue because neither party is sort of bringing the rest of the group into it.
So I'd say the dynamic is made more interesting also by the fact that, and I can't remember any of the actors' names, but the guy who's playing Julius James, who's wearing Spears' uniform,
mm-hmm.
is staring at the soldiers in a way that, you know, if that is very like interesting how intense he's looking at them,
right.
And they're kind of giving more flat looks back to him and to the group. They're trying to be more like, we're your saviors kind of vibe is what they're
right.
giving
and,
off
and
more.
what they're doling out sounds great, or at least it would if we didn't know who they were. And basically they're kind of like, hey, you guys survived and we're going to give you safe passage to the stadium and you made it and everything's going to be okay. You can put all control into our hands now.
Yeah. And so the other members of the group are responding to them with like hope and relief. And then there's Julius, who's just still like, the close-ups on his face are really good because
mm-hmm.
he's still got that like black eye, and he's looking kind of ragged. And there's a lot of close-ups of him staring at them that, you know, to get a lot across if you have connected the dots and recognize these two soldiers, which
right.
I still hadn't for a while until I had to like go back to episode one, rewatch it.
And Rose definitely picks up on it. She's not dumb. And she probably, I mean, she definitely knows Spears the most out of this group of survivors. So I think she picks up on that tension. I think others do too. I feel like Sun definitely does. But it's sort of one of those things where if they're not saying it, it's hard to give it, you know, maybe people are just super stressed out because they just had this heist and, you know, there are ways that you could kind of put this off or excuse it for other reasons. I will say that they suggest that the group all just to get some sleep and get some rest before they head out. And I think, you know, if I were in that position, I still wouldn't. We've seen enough bad behavior that I don't know that I would put all of my trust into these two people. But yeah, you know,
one or two of the group would have stayed awake, right? Most likely,
right?
Another really funny blooper, I would call it, is when one of the soldiers, I think his name is Bronk, talks about, you know, why they're not continuing to the stadium. It's because there's a protracted bombing, mm-hmm. you know, thing going on up on the top side, and he goes, the Army Air Corps is flattening everything outside, and I just want people to know that the Army Air Corps hasn't existed since 1947 when it became the Air Force.
Well, wasn't that, like, I don't know, I feel like that was deliberate, don't you?
No.
I think that was just them being terrible?
That was just the writers being like, what's a fancy name for Army airplanes?
I actually thought, so first of all, I don't know that we actually know that these two are actually soldiers either. So I thought that maybe they aren't, and this was sort of a tip off that they weren't.
I think that's a bridge too far. They're supposed to be soldiers. I mean, I was saying, you know, before that they didn't, none of them have really conformed to the look and feel of the military. Nobody in this entire show has looked military other than the uniforms that they're wearing, because most of them have slovenly haircuts.
Well, that's what I was going to say. You know? Like, everything about these guys doesn't really scream armed forces to me.
And that extends to every other soldier seen. Like, from the checkpoint to that bridge scene, every scene we've seen.
All right. Well, okay. So I will give it to you. I thought that this was, because I caught that too. And I just thought that was just a weird way to describe it, because everybody knows that it's the Air Force. But okay.
So we get to hear some more of those sound effects, and the bombing kind of is a player in both of these episodes that we're talking about. Mm-hmm. And remember, we had talked about how in the first episode we heard the bombing, but we couldn't see any evidence of, like, craters or, you know, structural damage when they get outside after this quote-unquote bombing, and that continues to be kind of a factor in these two episodes. Although there is one scene or several scenes that show, oh, a bomb must have landed nearby in the final episode, that we'll get there.
I don't know why they didn't just, you know, go and basically go into the set of Westeros, and that would have been appropriate. Because that's the level of destruction that would have been happening. But they're basically going out into these streets where there's, like, there is no evidence that there was bombing at all here.
This is a lovely Sunday morning in Calgary, is what this is.
Yeah.
I assume it's Calgary. I don't know where they actually are, but it feels like big Canadian, medium-sized Canadian city, right?
Yep.
But yeah, so the tunnel episode all happens underground. I don't know that they do finally just get outside by the end of this episode. But so everybody's asleep, and Jamie King's character, whose name is Rose, wakes up after she hears a door close quite loudly. And this is another kind of thing that I've griped about in zombie shows, like The Walking Dead, when that zombie fell down the entire flight of stairs at the hilltop and nobody woke up.
Yep.
Why is nobody else waking up when you're hearing Rose's breathing, which is super loud and super fast, and she's sleeping with a gun in her hand, which is terrifying. And then all these doors are closing, like, a few times, and it's super loud, and nobody else wakes up. And she's going, Spears, and nobody else wakes up. Did that frustrate you?
It totally frustrated me, and I knew you were going to have an issue with it. I also predicted that you were going to bring up the Hilltop episode, because it's almost exactly the same thing. Because if you have a group of people that are just so on edge, I mean, again, I still don't buy that they would have all just automatically gone to sleep here anyway. Somebody would have stayed up to watch, but whatever. But I think these people have been through an awful lot. They know better than to just, you know, totally pass out here. And then I kind of feel like, especially when noises are going to be that loud, you don't know what that noise is, and it's a threat. So you're not, I just don't feel like they're going to sleep through it. I mean, maybe you can make the argument that they're all totally exhausted, but
that would be my counterpoint to my point. Yeah. But this is the first time we've seen them sleep in the show, and it's been 3 days,
right.
I think.
But I still feel like somebody more than just Rose would have woken up. My bet would be on Sun, because Sun seems really high strung anyway. So I just kind of feel like she's just a lot more alert than some of the other folks. But in any case, this is how they play it. And I will say that they kind of had to do this to play out the storyline that they did. So basically, Rose goes to explore and ends up finding Spears being taken away by the two, soldiers.
Yeah. That scene, I can't decide if I love it or don't love it, which was shot behind Jamie King's shoulder, and the cameraman is walking very, like, there's no steady cam on this thing. It's bouncing up and down, and it's really blurry. The soldiers are super blurry.
I found it to be a little bit distracting, but I also thought, I felt like it was a little bit of a choice to make it as confusing and stressful as possible. Yeah. I think the other thing is
you cannot make them out, right? It looks like they might still be moving. Every so often they turn around and look at her, and she's shining a flashlight at them.
Yep.
It didn't quite jive for me that they would have just kept walking away from her, and that they wouldn't have come back and confronted her somehow. Not like violently, but the way that they just kind of tried to ignore her and keep walking away, I felt like was, they know that these people are armed.
Right, but they also are convinced of their own authority, I guess. And that's a little bit how they play it with her, is that they know who this guy is. He's not who he says he is. And just basically say, oh, we'll come back for you, which clearly is a lie.
You think it's just a major miscalculation on their part?
Yeah, I think it's the way that they are just dismissive of her, because obviously she's just a civilian, and they feel like they can play this story and she'll believe it. And she does kind of she does fall back a little bit. So maybe they feel like she's not a threat worth dealing with. And, you know, the other thing I would say is that Spears is clearly a threat. He's been a threat. He killed her colleague. They're not going to take their eyes off of him. But part of why I thought that they filmed it this way was also because it was similar to what we were seeing when she and Spears were on their very tired walkabout. And she was hallucinating and things like that. So I thought that they were trying to play up the fact that this was confusing. Maybe she's dreaming this. Maybe she did, you know, like, I think they were trying to play into that a little bit. Like, is this actually what's happening? Is this really what she's seeing? Is she dreaming right now? You know what I mean? Because it does seem kind of weird that nobody else woke up. So maybe this is just her having a nightmare. We know that's not true, but at least that's kind of how I read it. I do think it makes it confusing, and it's a little bit annoying because they are blurring out of focus, but it was fine with that. What I do like are the looks that are exchanged between her and Spears. And they do have a level of trust. And I think that despite the fact that the whole series doesn't have a ton of dialogue, but they play up the connections between characters just in their acting. And the moment that Spears saves her in the beginning of the series, they have a level of trust between each other that I think supersedes any other connections that they have with other characters. And in this case, she is willing to basically say, okay, I'm gonna believe you.
I'm gonna commit double murder.
Yep.
To prove it. Yeah, I mean, to an extent, let's say that the soldiers had weighed her upright and they could walk away with Spears, come back or not. I don't know that they were necessarily lying about sending a squad back, which is the last thing one of them says. If they had walked away with Spears and she was left with the crew that she had left, there's no saying that this thing would have played out any differently than it did necessarily.
True.
I mean, that's just my take, is that It seems a little bit like a different, like an odd take for her And morally, it's pretty significant that she would just straight up murder two human beings, which I don't think she has killed a living person yet on this show.
Well, I don't know that she had.
She's an accomplice in the murder of lots of people in the heist, I guess.
But. Right. But I feel like even before that, we saw a little bit. I think one of the places where you start to see a change in her character is in the school, because she's trying to give the kids the benefit of the doubt, and look what happened. And they almost died because of it. And her friend was turned, and I feel like that was a turning point for her character, in that there are specific people she knows she can trust, and she's typically not going to trust new people unless they prove it. She definitely knows she can trust Spears.
And for some reason, she has a soft spot for Lance, which was...
Yeah, Lance too. But, she makes a decision, and it's really fast, and she takes two of them out. And they don't tell... What's interesting is that there's an agreement between, I don't know, maybe they talked after this, but at least the audience doesn't see them discuss it. But basically, she and Spears, when they go back to the group, don't discuss what happens at all. They just said that the soldiers didn't make it.
Yeah. And, check your weapons. We're going outside. Which seems like a reasonable thing for them to do at this point, because the soldiers were willing to go outside. So I guess that means that the bombardment is over.
Right.
Although it turns out maybe that it wasn't.
Yeah.
In the next episode. So they do a quick little weapons montage with Jamie King picking up an MP5 and, like, looking down the sight. Very, very tropey.
Mm-hmm.
But... Okay, now our people are all armed and ready to go outside and find the stadium. And then they go outside. Earl does his weird whistling thing, and his dog runs over, and then he leaves the show forever.
Yep.
He might be the hero of this show.
He might be. We may see him later, but we know Lance recognizes the dog, and then,
he'd seen it in Alone and tried to get it to come to him, and it didn't. Uh-huh. And it was like, aw, sad Lance.
And then our group continues on, and
that's the end of this episode.
That is the end of this episode. And jumping in to the next one, which is the stadium. All right, I'm gonna let you kick this one off, because I have so many things that I'm wondering what you thought about it.
So, yeah, I've watched this one twice now. I mean, it's 20 minutes long. You could probably watch it several times. And I am overall pretty positive about this episode, honestly. I know there's a lot of people hated the ending. But so let me start at the beginning, though. They're walking outside. It is clearly like they're actually near a stadium. It looks like that kind of part of a downtown. And at first, there's just the group of them. And now they're all armed, and they look kind of badass. And I'm like, yeah, okay, this is going to be interesting. But I think the show would not make them all look badass if it wasn't about to throw the kitchen sink at them. And that's kind of what happens in this episode, is they get kitchen sinked in a big way.
They get kitchen sinked, but I did like that the idea that they're making their way toward the stadium, and then all the people that have managed to get this far, like other survivors, are all doing the same thing, and you see them kind of creeping in. You see them in the, like, you see them on the perimeter of your, like, and they don't know it yet. Like, it's just interesting when they notice these other people coming in. The thing that I thought, and overall I did like this episode. I liked the choreography. I liked the idea and the crazy chaos that happens within this episode.
But it was more of the single camera long takes stuff,
right,
with lots of extras running around, which must have made it really challenging to shoot. And so I think technically it's impressive from that perspective.
But one of the things that did drive me crazy is that as this group of all these survivors kind of move forward, their use of guns and their, like, waste of ammunition and their, at this point, they know what they are dealing with here. They know they have to get a headshot in. They know that.
I don't know that they do. I mean, they've never had guns until this scene, right? They've never used their guns that they've had.
Well, Rose,
our group of survivors.
Rose and Spears knows. They know that there has to be a headshot, and so does Lance, because he did that guy in with the ashtray.
Mm-hmm.
So at least our little group knows that. Apparently, everybody else does not. So, like, of course, we see, it's kind of interesting how they play it, because you see the infected, like one or two coming in there, and they waste an enormous amount of ammunition to get rid of these one or two people. And as is anticipated, and I did like this part, there is going to be some friendly fire, and we know that no matter how you die, whether you're bitten or not, you become an infected pretty quickly.
Right.
If you die.
There's so much potential for carnage in this episode with the amount of people running around, the amount of shooting going on. And I think they do a great job of showing how lethal this is, this combination of one or two zombies is how it starts out. But then that's enough to make this huge crowd of civilians with automatic weapons into a complete murder show, which is what it turns into.
And I honestly thought that, another spoiler here, Carmen does not make it, but to make her the crossfire and to basically really show the audience the potential of the mayhem that's about to just totally erupt I thought it was well done. And her turning was awesome and fast. And
so fast. She doesn't even get to fall over.
No.
She gets shot in the heart, presumably, by crossfire. And then turns on her feet. But it is frustrating that people just start to... This is when the chaos begins. Everybody starts to run in different directions. They're not running towards the stadium anymore. From this point on, people are running in every direction, which is not awesome. It's great for the chaos on the screen, but it doesn't make sense to my brain. And nobody just walks up and puts a bullet in her while she's still turning.
Right. But there is a lot of just general spray of bullets going on. The chaos that erupts, the choreography, how they're following the different characters, I think is really great. And they show little vignettes of what's going on with Rose and Spears and Lance and William.
They get split up into these little groups, and at first they're they're all more together, but then they get really split up, and it turns into Rose and Velez, William.
Yep, and Son and Spears.
Lance ends up by himself.
Of course.
which sucks. And Spears and Son.
I will point out that they don't show Lance dying.
Nope.
They just show him running, and running
with 40
is what,
zombies behind
and
him.
Running really desperately is something we know he can do. So I feel like maybe we haven't seen the end of Lance again.
But that episode was one zombie chasing him. Now he has a horde.
I know, but he is resourceful, Lance, in a really messed up and strange way. So I feel like we have, because they didn't show him die, I feel like they have had no problem in showing these characters die. I feel like he may still be around.
The way he loses his rifle also, just running into another human and dropping it, and then the other guy grabs his gun before getting eaten, but still, so that's so Lance, to lose his weapon that way. So the chaos is really happening. People are shooting other people. William shoots a human by accident.
Yep.
So does Son. And not only does she wings a human,
but at least she takes care of business when she realizes what she's done.
But here's the thing. She is firing with this little, it's like a mini Uzi or something.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only on automatic, of course.
I know.
But she fires three bursts into this guy, and three bursts of probably 15 rounds into a living person. Hopefully she's just trying to get a headshot that whole time. It's absurd. We also see Velez shoot a guy in the chest with a shotgun, which means that guy's going to be a zombie any second. But at this point, there are so many zombies that maybe it doesn't make sense to try and do the coup de grace sort of thing.
He does when he needs to, but, the desperation that Valdez is having, his leg is clearly hurt horribly. And he is making noises actually kind of like the zombies because he's in so much pain. So that was an added element to this. The chaos is great. The choreography is great. I did not like the weapon, because really all these people don't really know how to use these weapons. And even if you did, the lack of control and precision would be really hard to get these headshots in. And I do like that they haven't shown it, in the show, it's not automatic that you're going to get a headshot. They've done a good job at that. And they've done a great job in showing that just people don't have control over them, and you'll just get sprayed and create a bunch of infected. So I thought that was pretty good.
The scene with Carmen, zombie Carmen, running around. It does a great job of showing how hard it still is for these people to put zombies down, because she. It feels long, but it's probably only like a minute scene of her running from survivor human to human and getting shot a whole bunch of times. And then like another zombie will jump on that person and she'll look mad and run at another person until like this long chain of her running around. Does she ever get shot?
I don't think she got shot. Like, I don't think we see her get
taken. She gets shot lots of times, but
she does,
never
but
goes
she doesn't
down.
Go down. And then, no, I agree. I think that was great. And it puts a personal face on it because we know her. So, you know, and she's out there causing chaos. And then, you know, I just think how hard it is to get this group back together, to get the band back together. Near the stadium, and I really thought that the scene with the little barricades where they're trying to get into the stadium was great. I thought that was so good.
Well, a lot of that was one take again, like just panning forwards and then looking forwards and back, and Spears goes on a bit of a kill spree in a good way here. Like he's starting to be able to put them down, but it is not totally clear that he's putting them down for good, or if this is just sometimes when zombies get shot, they lie down for a few seconds and then they get back up and come after you again.
But that choreography, and specifically following him, and just as they follow the progress and how hard it is for them to get through, I admit I was totally shocked with what happened with Valdez. I didn't think they would go there, and they totally did. Or sorry, Velez.
Yeah.
I didn't think they would go there, and they did.
And that's one of the best things about this episode, is just how he's becoming more and more of a liability, and they're dragging him. Everything is crazy, and so you're not expecting it, because the pacing has not led you to think this is going to happen, and you're not even able to see his face before he goes.
And basically, because he, at this point, is not even able to get forward, it's both Sun and Rose carrying him, and he basically, you start to hear him say, "Kill me, kill me," and you don't think they are going to kill him, and then Rose turns around and clocks him back with what, like in the head, and he's done. And I admit, I was like, did that really just happen? And I actually I'm like, okay, so that they did that, so I thought that, and I just thought their progression through this space and the choices that they made to show all of this was awesome.
And when they first get up into that concourse, this like a raised concourse towards the gates into the stadium, there are other humans up there, like further down at the barricades. You could tell that it's not all zombies up there.
Right.
But by the time they have killed Velez, it's basically there are no more alive people.
No.
It's all zombies up there with them.
Just
they're
the
fighting
three.
Their way through. There was also the scene, a couple of shot and a couple of the perspective of a couple different people of an explosion.
Mm.
Really, it's just in the form of white smoke and the actors going, "Oh, I'm so knocked over."
And a little bit of ringing, ear ringing.
And some ringing in the sound department.
Okay, but what I found weird about this part is that it didn't seem to affect everybody equally. So, like, Spears was fine, but Sun wasn't, Lance wasn't. You know what I mean? Like Rose seemed to be just fine.
Like, Velez falls over and starts bleeding from his ears immediately.
Yeah.
Rose gets up and is like, let's go, Velez. So yeah, that's not super. That I have a bit of a beef with that. But then you know what? If their budget doesn't allow for actual physical explosion effects,
what are they going to do?
They would never really do an urban bomb strike justice, frankly, without like a film budget. This is as good as you can do, and I think by keeping the action really frenetic and the focus really tight on one character, using the smoke, sure, I'll take it. Some theater of the mind is required.
I guess
that's
so.
Okay.
And then also the sort of jet through the gates and then locking the gates was done well. I really did feel as if they had barely made it through and barely gotten it closed, and I thought that was the editing job was good.
And by this point, you also kind of have the realization that they are all that made it through of all those people who are walking towards the stadium.
Yep. And then we have them walk into the stadium, and I have so many questions here. So,
yeah.
So basically, they start walking through, and you know, when you think about it, and we've seen stadiums, I mean, we saw a stadium being used in Fear of the Walking Dead. And if you think about it from a, like, it's a place that can hold a lot of people. There's some obvious barriers and things like that. It could be a liability because it's like a warren, like a rabbit warren. But this is where everybody was supposed to be going for rescue efforts, right? There isn't anybody there. And there also isn't really, I mean, there's sort of stuff that's like thrown around and things like that, but not in the way that you would expect if this had been housing like an enormous group of people.
Yeah.
And especially when our trio of Sun, Spears, and Rose basically get into the main stadium area and look down, the field is pristine. The seats are pristine. And again, I don't know if this was just because they didn't have the budget to show what like a kind of refugee area might look like after the chaos of everybody there, or if we're supposed to take from this that nobody made it here. I don't know. What did you think about that?
Yeah, I tend to think that this was, they just didn't have the budget to dress this set, okay, this huge set in the, for the 5 minutes of shooting.
Maybe, yeah.
That ended up here. But I think it would have been way cooler if they had been able to, maybe if they'd found a smaller stadium that mm-hmm. they could have dressed. But I'm sure that, you know, there were all kinds of restrictions. I'm going from a production standpoint. I think you can read the story element that you bring up, like maybe nobody ever made it here. But there were enough soldiers among the zombies outside that make me think there was definitely some sort of presence here.
Okay. And also, I mean, obviously, they're being bombed around here or something. So there's something to be said for that. So they make it into the stadium and they're walking down onto the field. And then we see one lone guy come out and they raise their weapons to him. He raises his weapon to them and then they all kind of stand down.
I don't know. That part was like, why are you all pointing guns at other humans?
That right. Well, sense. I mean, I think from a distance, he's not sure if they are human. And then they raise their weapons and he's like, oh, okay, you guys are not clearly, you're clearly not the infected. And then we see Rose's daughter just appear. And so it's basically, I mean, as far as we know at this point, it's just her and this guy in the stadium, which is like, I feel like maybe there's more people in there somewhere, but like this is a little weird that of all the people she would come out, but that's the end of this where she just goes running towards her mother. And again, there's a little bit of, you know, she's been hallucinating about her daughter all along. Maybe that's happening. I don't know. The whole thing felt a little dreamlike and some of it may have been the set dressing piece, but that is basically the end of this series. And overall, I really have to say loved it, but you know.
I'm with you. There were enough haters, but then that's, you know, sometimes that's just the internet, and we've seen that definitely with Game of Thrones also, with the way that season's been progressing, that if the story doesn't go the way people want it to, there's going to be a lot of hurt feelings somehow. Whereas, I don't know, I feel like you and I, well, that's not true. We sometimes gripe about story direction a lot, in fact, but just the vitriol that this show got on online.
Yeah,
it reminds me of what's going on with Game of Thrones right now.
Well, yeah, but I feel in this case, this series, I mean, I feel like compared to a lot of other things that we have watched, I think they've done a great job in the way that they've portrayed things. Obviously, you and I always have some gripes because that's just how it makes it fun that way. But in terms of the relationships between the characters and the way that the story is going, overall, I think they did a solid job. And they managed to do it in very succinct episodes, so it really isn't a ton of filler. So I would recommend this to people, and I have. And it's interesting because when I've talked to other people who enjoy you know, zombie shows or horror shows or whatever, I get an answer back that's like, oh, I'm kind of sick of these shows and oh, whatever. And I'm like, no, this is actually, they do this very well. So I'm definitely in Stephen King's camp with this show.
Yeah. Yeah. And I saw some, and Netflix is really weird about how they release information, right? But Netflix UK did release a chart that said Black Summer was the most watched show in the UK in April.
Interesting.
I wish we had some kind of indication for the U.S. where it fell. Probably, maybe it wasn't high at all. But so I think if that's the case, there's a very good chance that they will be making more.
I hope they do. And I also thought that the cast was solid. I liked the direction of the show. I really loved everything about this. And so this has been just a fun ride. I definitely am on board with more of this happening. So let's see how they make out. Game of Thrones.
There was some more zombie action last week in the battle for King's Landing. I don't know that it was enough for us to talk about at any great length.
Yeah, probably not.
So I don't know how much more Game of Thrones we can talk about. It might just have been the battle for Winterfell and then that's it. And that makes me sad inside a little bit. But I am going to a finale party tomorrow.
Yep.
And there will be a roast pig, and we're trying to do a potluck with recipes from Inn at the Crossroads. Is kind of the theme.
So is somebody going to be making some hot pies or something? Bakery items.
There's going to be some rustic loaves of bread. Mm. I'm cheaping out and just getting
stew.
There's a recipe like that's called Snacks with Davos,
which is,
I think, where he just eats like feta cheese and mulled white wine. and olives, and so that's what I'm doing.
We are also having a finale party. As you know, we have a very large gathering every week where we watch this, and like in terms of the death pool, I have come out on top from my predictions from the beginning. Also, my predictions about Daenerys, which I was predicting last season, have come to pass. So
how prescient.
Yep. Although I would even say, did you read the books?
I've read all of them that have come out, but it's been a long time.
I would say that they were sort of, I think at least in the books, there is some, there's definitely indications that this was the way that they were like going to deal with her character based upon some of her decisions. I think that, I have to say one of my friends thinks that it's very hard to land, to do a good landing for a show like this that has so many people invested.
And how many storylines?
So many storylines. And so I honestly am not shocked, and I honestly wasn't all that upset with what they did, because I think you kind of have to in order to wrap some of this stuff. I wish that they had done a slightly longer season so that some of this would have a bit more context. And I do think, one thing I admit, I felt like just generally that the Walkers and the Night King were going to have a much greater role in general for this last season than they did. Obviously they were center stage for the Winterfell battle. But I kind of thought that Cersei was going to get her comeuppance for sitting out on this, like that this was what the important battle was. So I kind of thought that this battle was going to spill into King's Landing time, and that's not what has happened. So I'm slightly surprised at that, but we'll see what happens tomorrow.
Yeah, and then we'll have to put it to bed. But there are spinoffs coming.
I know. I don't know that I'm happy about that, but but we'll see. I'm excited though to see the finale, and it's always fun to have like a group of people that are really excited about it, and do the sort of blow by blow afterwards. So, tear it apart.
Well, I hope that you've enjoyed recapping Black Summer with us. Obviously, we're fan boys and girls, and happy to be in that camp. Game of Thrones, we're also, I think, along for the ride, and that's part of, for me, enjoying media is getting to go into a writer's world and kind of like let go of the reins and let go of control. And I think that that is something that people need to work on.
Mm-hmm.
It's letting people tell them a story and not feeling like they have some agency in it, in being able to control the outcome of that story.
Correct.
So that I think is something that we all need to take away as a lesson. But continue along with us on Reanimated next time when we are going to be reviewing a film of unknown goodness.
Correct.
But we are going to throw ourselves at the mercy of those writers with Daylight's End.
Right, which is... 2016
yeah. film.
And it's on Prime, so if you want to watch it and then listen to us, that's great. If you have any comments about Black Summer and about the wrap-up of Black Summer, send us an email at reanimatedpodcast@gmail.com, tweet at us, reanimatedpcast, or you could leave a message to us on our site, reanimatedpodcast.com.
Correct, correctingtons. So thank you for listening, and bye-bye.
Ciao.